Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. Houston's community station, 90.1 FM, FM HD1, Galveston 89.5 FM, and Huntsville 91.7 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on dozens of radio stations in different US and European cities. During this episode of Arab Voices, episode number 1169, I will have a few segments. First, we will listen to the latest electronic intifada newscast covering the ongoing Israeli genocide and ethnic cleansing in occupied Palestine. Then I will air the remarks and testimonies delivered at a press conference held in Canada, organized by Doctors Against Genocide, where we will hear from doctors who returned after volunteering at Gaza hospitals, sharing what they witnessed there. But before I do that, I'd like to ask for your support and contributions to KPFT, this unique commercial-free Houston's community station, because KPFT is currently in fund drive, and that is a great opportunity to upgrade your listenership to listener sponsor and become a member of the KPFT family. KPFT is mainly financed by listeners like you, and it does not rely on the corporate world to operate. So please give us a call right now at 713-526-5738. And make that tax-deductible contribution to support your community radio station. That's 713-526-5738. You can also make a pledge online at kpft.org. Join us in keeping the airwaves alive. Your support during this fund drive ensures that KPFT remains a vibrant hub of local voices and diverse perspectives, just like this program, Arab Voices, that has been on KPFT for over 22 years. Yes, we started in April 2002, coming to you weekly with over 1,000 expert guests appearing on this program from across the world. So it's crucial to continue your support to your community radio station, KPFT 90.1 FM. Every dollar you contribute goes directly towards sustaining independent journalism, empowering grassroots initiatives, and fostering a sense of belonging in our community. Together, we can make a difference through the power of community radio. 713-526-5738 is the number to call right now and support your community radio station. And again, you can do it online safely and securely at kpft.org. Arab Voices, if you're not familiar with it, is an award-winning independent radio talk show that aims at bringing the truth, facts, and realities to the wide and diverse range of listeners. It debunks many of the stereotypes, myths, and false information disseminated by certain media outlets, some politicians, and others. So if you appreciate what this station has been doing, I ask you to support it and keep Arab Voices and other programs on the air. Please make that call and make a pledge of any amount, whether it's $60 or $360. Call 713-526-5738 or make a pledge online at kpft.org. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. The Israeli war crimes and genocide against the Palestinians continue at a massive scale, murdering dozens of children, babies, men, and women on a daily basis, and intentionally starving millions of Palestinians. Let's listen to the latest electronic intifada newscast covering the latest ongoing Israeli genocide and ethnic cleansing on occupied Palestine.
This is the electronic intifada newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, associate editor at the electronic intifada. It's day 615 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israeli forces carried out massacres across the Gaza Strip this week, killing 497 Palestinians and wounding nearly 2,100 between June 5th and June 11th, targeting Palestinian men, women, and children in residential buildings, school shelters, tent shelters, and at so-called aid distribution points. Israel killed at least 123 Palestinians between Tuesday and Wednesday alone, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza. Nearly half of those deaths recorded in that 24-hour period were people killed while trying to retrieve meager parcels of aid at the U.S.-Israeli distribution points. Since the shadowy so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation began its operations 2 weeks ago, the health ministry says that more than 220 Palestinians have been killed and more than 1,800 injured while trying to obtain food. The Red Cross Field Hospital in Rafah has had to activate its mass casualty incident procedure 12 times since the aid scheme began, receiving high numbers of patients with gunshot and shrapnel wounds, reporting that an overwhelming majority of patients from the recent incidents said they had been trying to reach assistance distribution sites. On June 5th, Doctors Without Borders said that physicians began donating their own blood to save their patients after scores of Palestinians were gunned down trying to get food aid. And that was a week ago. In northern Gaza, Israel relentlessly pounded areas of Jabalia and Gaza City this week. On Saturday, June 7th, 30 people were reported killed in an airstrike on a residential building in Gaza City, according to the Palestinian Civil Defense, while 4 new displacement orders were issued for areas in northern Gaza. This video shows Palestinian civil defense workers and first responders trying to safely evacuate civilians from an Israeli military-designated red zone in Jabalia. According to journalist Ali Abu Harbid, Israeli quadcopter drones targeted anyone who crossed into the arbitrary boundary as Israeli forces prevented rescuers from reaching and evacuating those left behind. Israel cut the last remaining internet access line in northern Gaza earlier this week, plunging the area into a near blackout and preventing people from calling ambulances after massive airstrikes. And today, on Thursday, a total communications blackout was reported across central and southern Gaza as well, collapsing internet and phone services following Israeli airstrikes on telecom infrastructure, according to the Palestinian Telecommunications Regulatory Authority. Journalist Al-Hassan Salmi delivered this report on Wednesday from the besieged north after the internet connections were severed.
Hello everyone, this is me Al-Hassan Salmi, journalist from northern Gaza. Just to keep you up to date here, the situation is going from bad to worse because of the ongoing bombardment. More than 40 people have been killed from the morning until now. And now the second day without internet connection, without communication here in northern Gaza Strip. And this situation makes the situation worse because the injured people cannot call the ambulances to come to Jabalia or to Beit Lahia or to the bombing area to take them to the hospital. So they trying to come to the hospital on food, and this is a very hard because they lost their life during their way here in Gaza. Second day without connection here in northern Gaza. Israeli army still pushing the people and force them to evacuate from northern Gaza to South Gaza Strip. And this scenario happened in the beginning of this genocidal war. Now I will try to use the eSIM to catch the internet from outside Gaza to just keep you up to date here from northern Gaza Strip without connection, without internet. This is the second day, and here in the hospital, the injured people and the martyr arrive without a stop because the ongoing bombardment from different area in Gaza Strip, in northern Gaza Strip. Here, there is no any safe area, there is no any calm area. The Israeli F-16 and the Israeli tanks didn't stop shelling here in different area.
That was journalist Al-Hassan Salmi reporting from northern Gaza. At 3 o'clock in the morning on June 9th, UNICEF spokesperson James Elder, who was in Gaza, recorded himself amidst the sounds of incessant airstrikes, tank fire, and drone attacks.
Night after night, I can hear the screams from tents, air attacks, bombs, tank fire, kids being burnt in their tents. Those kids will get to a hospital, maybe the ones that are horrendously burnt. Limbs being off in there, there'll be no medicines, no painkillers, because they're denied entry. Those children will lie there screaming in pain as they are right now. And they'll be not denied the ability to leave here. Bombed in their tents, somehow survive, writhing pain, denied painkillers, denied medicines, and then denied a chance of life by leaving. Denied life.
That was James Elder, spokesperson for UNICEF in Gaza this week. The Gaza government media office stated on Wednesday that the Israeli occupation is, quote, deliberately creating chaos in the Gaza Strip by perpetuating a policy of starvation and deliberately targeting and killing starving people seeking food. This week, images and accounts by Palestinians who have been injured at these humiliating so-called aid points continued to pour in, directly contradicting the public relations campaign touting the, quote, success of aid distribution by U.S. and Israeli officials, as Israel has prevented actual international aid from entering Gaza for more than 3 consecutive months. The Gaza government media office warned the international community that the Israeli government and its U.S. mercenary partners have turned aid centers into, quote, human slaughterhouses, and demanded that the world act to allow the flow of real aid into Gaza, as people starve or risk death by trying to obtain small boxes of food that are wholly inadequate to meet the basic needs of 2 million hungry people, half of them children. Quote, the international community must end its bias, end this moral tragedy, and allow the entry of tens of thousands of trucks belonging to United Nations agencies, which have been working for decades to provide relief to refugees and civilians, and which are efficient and committed to the principles of humanitarian action. Reports from one of the 4 Gaza humanitarian foundation points in the Netzarim corridor, a militarized zone south of Gaza City, this week showed Palestinians lining up before dawn, only to be told that there was no aid left to distribute. Video captured by Palestinians seeking food at one of the private aid points shows crowds of hungry people running under rapid gunfire. Quote, everything that is happening to us is for flour, one man in the video says. Here's that clip. Philippe Lazzarini, the Commissioner General of UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, said on June 10th that, quote, this humiliating system continues to force thousands of hungry and desperate people to walk for tens of miles, excluding the most vulnerable and those living too far. This system does not intend to address hunger. Aid deliveries and distribution must be at scale and safe. In Gaza, this can only be done through the United Nations, including UNRWA. We have the expertise, the knowledge, and community trust. The State of Israel must lift the siege and allow the UN safe and unhindered access to bring in aid and distribute it safely. This is the only way to avert mass starvation, including among 1 million children. Today, there are 12,000 UNRWA staff who continue providing health, sanitation, and psychosocial services under the most brutal and adverse environment. Our warehouses outside Gaza are full with a volume of assistance equivalent to 6,000 trucks. Letting food rot and medicine deliberately expire would simply be obscene, Lazzarini stated. Meanwhile, the New York-based Center for Constitutional Rights has officially notified the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation of its potential legal liability for complicity in Israel's war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide against Palestinians. In a 40-page letter to the private corporation's new CEO, Johnny Moore, who is a Christian Zionist evangelical and dismissed the daily killings at the aid points as, quote, fictional massacres, the civil rights organization warns that if the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, GHF, does not cease its operations in Gaza, they could face civil litigation or criminal prosecution in different countries, as well as legal action before international bodies. The Center for Constitutional Rights senior staff attorney Catherine Gallagher stated, quote, For the past 20 months, Israel has used the denial of food, water, and other basic necessities to carry out its genocide against the Palestinian population of Gaza. As Palestinians now face mass starvation, Israel has teamed up with GHF to make accessing food not only dangerous and potentially deadly, but also a tool of forced displacement. If GHF continues its militarized aid operations, it must be prepared to face the legal consequences, whether in the United States or beyond. The Center for Constitutional Rights says that this comes as the U.S. State Department is considering giving GHF, whose funding remains opaque, $500 million. Israel killed three paramedics and a journalist on Monday, June 9th, as the team was responding to an emergency call in eastern Gaza City. Dropsite News reported that the team was dispatched to assist casualties from an earlier strike and was itself targeted while attempting the rescue. A second team that tried to reach the wounded paramedics was reportedly attacked by Israeli quadcopters. The three medics, Bara Afana, who was just 18 years old, Wael Al-Attar, and Hussein Mohaisen, were all killed in the attack. Mohaisen was reportedly the paramedic who heroically rescued two little girls from a massive firebomb inside a Gaza City school shelter just 2 weeks ago, including the four-year-old girl, Hanin, who was captured on video walking through flames. The other girl he rescued, seven-year-old Wared, narrowly escaped the inferno as well. And the journalist Mohamed Abu Alouf, who reported from the attack and during the rescues, was also killed in Monday's attack along with the paramedics. He was accompanying the team in the same ambulance to document the rescue. In what turned out to be his final message to colleagues, he wrote, "The army is hitting near me. I don't think I have much time left," Dropsite reported. Mohamed Abu Alouf, who was only 19 when he was murdered in the June 9th attack, was the 227th journalist and media worker to be killed by Israel since October 2023. The Palestinian Civil Defense stated on Wednesday that, quote, "While we share the grief and heartbreak of the families of our martyred colleagues and all martyrs of the ambulance and humanitarian services, we affirm the sincerity of these heroes' loyalty and devotion to their humanitarian duty and the noble mission for which they worked. We testify that they did not leave their positions throughout this war, and they continued day and night to fulfill their national and moral duty and serve our people." Journalist Anas Al-Sharif spoke at the funerals of the paramedics and his colleague Mohamed, embracing Faris Afana, the father of Bara Afana. Faris is the director of emergency and ambulance services in northern Gaza. Quote, "Our hearts are broken and our pain is great," wrote Anas Al-Sharif. "May God help you, my brother and beloved Abu Hamza Faris Afana." Turning to the catastrophic medical situation and the ongoing attacks on hospitals, the director general of Gaza's health ministry, Dr. Munir Al-Bursh, told Al Jazeera on Saturday, June 7th, that, quote, "The Israeli occupation is besieging Al-Amal and Nasser hospitals in Khan Yunis, preventing entry and exit, and demolishing the surrounding buildings, a repetition of the northern scenario that began with the destruction of the area around Al-Awda Hospital and Tal al-Zaatar, the Indonesian hospital, and Kamal Adwan Hospital, all aimed at forcibly displacing the population. What is happening is the implementation of a premeditated, systematic plan to empty Khan Yunis of its residents. We are witnessing ethnic cleansing broadcast live, with no deterrence and no accountability, in one of the most documented crimes in history. We only have 3 days of fuel left. The World Health Organization informed us that it cannot deliver the fuel it has in storage, claiming the occupation has designated the storage locations as red zones. The occupation is deliberately working to destroy the entire healthcare system as part of its strategy of control and displacement. We are now nearing the fifth stage of famine, the stage of mass death, and the world watches in silence, sipping its coffee while massacres are carried out in Gaza. Those are the words of Dr. Munir Al-Bursh, the Director General of the Health Ministry in Gaza. The ministry warned on June 11th that hospitals are experiencing both severe overcrowding and the near-total depletion of basic medications and essentials. All hospitals in northern Gaza are officially out of service, the health ministry added. Emergency interventions, quote, will be meaningless as health and humanitarian indicators deteriorate to levels and outcomes that are difficult to address. Turning quickly to the occupied West Bank, on Tuesday, June 9th, Israeli forces launched an invasion and mass arrest operation in the old city of Nablus in the north. The United Nations Humanitarian Office says that Israeli soldiers imposed a curfew, conducted house-to-house searches, and reportedly used a school as an interrogation center. At least 20 homes have been searched, with reports of damage to Palestinian property. On Monday in Jenin, the Israeli military announced an imminent plan to demolish nearly 96 structures, most of them residential, in Jenin refugee camp. More than 280 families who stand to be affected had been given 72 hours to retrieve their personal belongings, the UN said. And in Tulkarem, Israeli raids and demolition orders have intensified in the Tulkarem and Nur Shams refugee camps since Friday, June 6th. More than 36 buildings have been demolished so far, according to the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, with destruction extending beyond the original orders issued at the beginning of the month. Our contributor Zeina El-Tahan, writing for the Electronic Intifada in her report, Will Israel Expand Its Assault on the West Bank?, which we published in late May, says that, quote, the mass deliberate displacement and destruction of entire refugee camps, openly declared and executed as a strategic objective by the Israeli military and government, raises serious questions about the fate of Palestinian survivors of the 1948 Nakba and their descendants, particularly if the operation expands to other areas of the West Bank. Not only that, it puts into question the next phase for the millions of Palestinians across the entire West Bank, as Israeli forces now station themselves in the heart of Palestinian city centers, which make up so-called Area A, which is nominally under the governance of the Palestinian Authority. Analysts believe that the worst is yet to come. Al-Tahan writes that along with refugee camps in the north, in areas like Jenin, Tulkarem, and Nablus, quote, Israeli forces have intensified their raids on other refugee camps across the West Bank. In the Dehesha refugee camp in the southern city of Bethlehem, soldiers hung up flyers warning residents against the, quote, heavy price that refugee camps of the northern West Bank have, quote, paid for terror and armed activities. Incursions into Ramallah's refugee camps of Amari and Jalazon have also increased. Besides the refugee camps, Nablus-based political analyst Suleiman Bisharat believes Israel, as a matter of policy, seeks to take over the entire West Bank. Quote, the West Bank is at the core of the aspirations of the Israeli state. That Israel may retreat from its policies in the occupied West Bank is impossible, unless some major global transformations force it to, he said. Israel claims that there is a security rationale for this operation, but that is not the real goal. Their goals are political, imposing Israeli control over the West Bank as well as ending the issue of 1948 Palestinian refugees, said Bisharat. Those are excerpts from Will Israel Expand Its Assault on the West Bank by Zeina El-Tahan, writing from Occupy Jerusalem on electronicintifada.net. In the U.S., a major legal victory was won on Wednesday, June 11th, as a federal court judge concluded that Columbia University student leader Mahmoud Khalil would continue to suffer irreparable harm if he remains detained, and granted Khalil's request for a preliminary injunction. Khalil is a green card holder and permanent U.S. resident who has been in an ICE detention facility for more than 3 months over his advocacy for Palestinian rights. This preliminary injunction blocks the Trump administration from using the provision of the Immigration and Nationality Act, the INA, that Secretary of State Marco Rubio invoked to detain and attempt to deport Khalil and other students and scholars for their speech, according to the Center for Constitutional Rights. They say that this is the first federal court to rule that Khalil and other non-citizens cannot be deported based solely on the so-called foreign policy ground of the INA. It is a blow to the Trump administration's attempt to suppress the speech of those who protest and speak out in support of Palestinian rights. One of Mahmoud Khalil's lawyers, Amy Greer, said, quote, today the judge found what we already knew. The Rubio determination is unconstitutional. The U.S. government cannot detain people for their protected political advocacy. Today was the first step to justice, but we will not stop fighting until Mahmoud is home with his wife and child. Finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine and around the world. Last week, we covered the Gaza Freedom Flotilla and the Madeleine ship, which was carrying 12 international activists and humanitarian aid, aiming to break the siege on Gaza. Early Monday morning, June 9th, the boat was hijacked by Israeli forces, and the activists were forcibly taken to Israel against their will, where they were either deported or remained detained in Israeli jails. Tiago Avila, an activist from Brazil, is in jail and has been on a hunger and water strike since Tuesday. He was subsequently placed in solitary confinement because of it. But it has not stopped the momentum of people in the region and around the world who are repulsed by the inaction of political powers in the face of this genocide and are compelled to intervene themselves. This week, a massive land convoy took off from Morocco, with thousands of people aiming to break the siege. Part of the global march to Gaza, the Samoud, or Steadfastness Convoy, is traveling through North Africa and is hoping to reach Rafah this weekend. Unlike governments and societies that have grown used to silence, these participants are taking the long road to affirm Gaza is not alone, the activists say. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.
You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on dozens of radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Shortly, I will share with you the remarks and testimonies delivered at a press conference held in Canada by Doctors Against Genocide, where we will hear from doctors who returned after volunteering at Gaza hospitals, sharing what they witnessed there. I'd like to remind you that KPFT, Houston's community station, is currently in fund drive, and because KPFT relies on your support to operate, I am asking you to please call us right now and make a tax-deductible contribution. During this membership drive, please make a gift in support of the wide variety of shows that matters more than ever on KPFT. Please give online at kpft.org or call 713-526-5738. Members are the single most important source of funding for KPFT 90.1 FM. Why don't you call right now to make your membership investment and become a part of that important source? 713-526-5738, or you can give online at kpft.org. And if you make your membership a sustaining one, you'll be supporting the station for years to come. 713-526-5738 or kpft.org. This program, Arab Voices, has been on KPFT for over 22 years, coming to you every week, covering various topics with over 1,000 expert guests appearing on this program from around the globe. I interview guests on the show, and I also attend events and lectures, record them, and air them. Several radio stations syndicate Arab Voices in different cities in the U.S. and even a couple of cities in Europe. So if you appreciate what this station has been doing, we ask you to support it and keep Arab Voices and other programs on the air. Please make that call and make a pledge of any amount, whether it's $60 or $360. Call 713-526-5738 or make a pledge online at kpft.org. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. On May 28, 2025, a press conference organized by Doctors Against Genocide was held in Ottawa, Canada, at which a member of the Parliament, Canadian doctors and healthcare workers returning from volunteering at Gaza hospitals shared their eyewitness accounts. Let's listen to those remarks and testimonies and their demands of the Canadian government.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for being here today. I'm here. My name is Heather McPherson. I'm the Member of Parliament for Edmonton Strathcona and the Foreign Affairs Critic for the New Democratic Party. I'm here to stand in solidarity with Canadian healthcare workers who are here to testify about what they have witnessed in Gaza during this genocide. I want to thank Doctors Against Genocide for sharing their time with us today. This is the defining moral issue of our time. As you know, New Democrats have long called on the Canadian government to end its complicity in this genocide. The time for statements is over. Long past time for action. Strong political and moral choices that will put pressure on Netanyahu to end this. We demand an arms embargo, sanctions on Netanyahu and his cabinet, and the immediate recognition of the State of Palestine, in order to move forward with a political solution that could save millions of lives and end this horror. Today, I'm proud to announce that I have reintroduced my motion to recognize the State of Palestine on the order paper. And I'm encouraging my colleagues in the Commons to co-sponsor this motion. No matter what party you are from, now is the time to raise your voice. Now is the time to put pressure on Prime Minister Mark Carney to do the right thing. Last week, we called for the suspension of CFTA. Europe and the UK are also considering suspending trade with Israel. Political pressure is the only thing that will end this. For 19 months, we have watched this horror continue. Every day, we see more images and videos of traumatized children and parents, of amputees, of tens of thousands of innocent people killed. Forced starvations, bombings, entire families and communities wiped out. The healthcare workers you will hear from now are Canadian heroes who have put their bodies on the line to save the lives of Palestinians in Gaza. I urge you to listen to their voices today and to hear their pain and their appeal to the government as we all confront our collective failure to do everything possible to end this genocide. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Heather. Really appreciate your moral clarity and moral courage in this moment that requires all of us to show that same level of courage. Good morning, everyone. My name is Maysa Hawash. I'm a healthcare professional, a workplace equity and inclusion expert, and one of the founding leaders of Doctors Against Genocide, a global coalition of healthcare workers and advocates who refuse to stay silent as the world witnesses a catastrophic assault on human life, dignity, and the very foundations of medical ethics. We are healthcare workers who took an oath to protect life, an oath that now compels us to speak truth to power. I stand before you as a Palestinian Canadian who knows exactly what it means to live under brutal occupation, where occupying forces control your breath, your dreams, your very right to exist. What you see in Gaza today is the logical endpoint of this decades-long machinery of dehumanization. Hospitals bombed, not just to kill patients, but to erase healing itself. Schools destroyed, not just to end lives, but to exterminate futures. The tens of thousands killed are only the visible casualties. The real crime lives on in the children who now see and associate sunlight with drones. Mothers, so malnourished, they birth generations of already starved babies, their tiny, deformed bodies by famine weapons, their organs pre-aged by trauma. And now we are witnessing starvation weaponized with surgical precision, walking 15 kilometers through danger zones to queue for a single food parcel, only to be detained or bombed at the so-called distribution points. This is a sick theater where Israeli forces starve Palestinians to perform their dehumanization for the world cameras to see, while deliberately blocking UN-regulated systems that could actually deliver food and feed people. Genocide is a global health emergency of the highest order. It is the catastrophic destruction of every aspect of human, animal, and environmental health. It must be confronted, and we are all accountable. Canada's complicity through arms deals, diplomatic cover, and the shameful promotion of weapons expos like CANSEC fuels the machinery of genocide. Today we present a prescription in the form of medical orders meant to heal and treat the devastating disease of genocide. We present this prescription to Prime Minister Mark Carney and the newly elected cabinet and MPs. Mr. Carney, you have the power to shape policies that can reaffirm Canada's commitment to humanity and morality. You wrote a book about the values of solidarity, fairness, and responsibility. You stood up against threats to Canada's sovereignty and the unfair tariffs. Now is the time to live up to your stated values and show us real action. The world is watching. Will you be remembered as the statesman who acted to stop genocide, or the banker who calculated its cost and profit? And so our prescription for justice is very simple. End the siege and deliver aid. Enforce a permanent ceasefire. Stop arming apartheid, a two-way arms embargo with no loopholes. Enforce the Genocide Convention. Hold Canadians accountable. Investigate and prosecute Canadians serving in IOF for war crimes. Enforce international law. Recognize the state of Palestine and cut ties with illegal settlements. And defend our freedoms of expression. The time for empty words is over. Canada must act now. Thank you. Now we'll hear from our Canadian doctors who have returned from Gaza, and then we will open it up for questions and answers. Thank you so much.
My name is Deirdre Noonan. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I returned from Gaza on April the 17th after spending 7 weeks working there. It was my fifth time working in Gaza. Although I arrived during the ceasefire, I saw freshly wounded patients every day, injuries consistent with weaponized drones and powerful explosions. When the ceasefire was broken on March 18th, my first patient was a young man, 19 years old, his leg torn from his body at the level of his hip. It is one of the worst limb injuries I have seen in my entire career, but yet I saw two more patients with almost identical injuries in the 4 weeks that followed, and so many more injuries that were just as devastating. Healthcare workers in Gaza feel particularly vulnerable. More than 14,000 have been killed in the last year and a half. Two of my physician friends were killed in hospitals where they worked. Two more were abducted from hospitals and are still held in Israeli prisons. This spring, I treated a pharmacist who was in his pharmacy when it was bombed by Israeli forces. He must have been holding a pen when he was attacked. The ink had spattered all over his hand. I still don't know if he lived. I was in Gaza when Nasser Hospital Surgical Department was attacked in March and when Al-Ahli Emergency Room was attacked in April. And we looked at each other and we wondered, would our hospital be next? But the staff kept coming to work because they had no other safe place to go, although they were terrified, and they told me this, that they might be killed without their families or their families might be killed without them. I was home already on May 13th. When my hospital, the European Gaza Hospital, was attacked with numerous Israeli airstrikes, which put the hospital out of service, killed and injured around 60 people. That was a full functioning hospital with patients, families, visitors, doctors, medical students who came every day to study, residents who came to work to treat patients and to continue to study and advance in their exams. As a surgeon, I cannot treat a genocide. As doctors, we cannot stop a famine. So we demand that the Canadian government take meaningful action to enact a ceasefire, enforce a complete two-way arms embargo, prosecute attacks on healthcare, including investigating Canadians who have served in the Israeli forces for potential involvement in those and other war crimes, to end the siege and deliver aid to Gaza, and to uphold the Genocide Convention.
My name's Dr. Sarah Lalonde. I'm a Montreal-based double-certified emergency and family doctor. I worked at the European Gaza Hospital from late January until February 27th of this year. I saw many things that go against our Canadian values. I saw a young boy, Yusuf, who loved, in this picture here, who loved to play soccer and could sing beautifully, who loved his mother more than anyone else in the world. He was a small boy, even smaller than his age would have predicted. He was a primary school aged child who was shot by a sniper during the ceasefire and had a painful journey in our hospital. He was no fighter. On top of the trauma, on top of that, now he has to deal with starvation, and now he is at risk for dying from starvation. Every human being deserves medical aid in that situation. I have, as someone who's been in settings where children have experienced severe malnutrition, and as someone who has seen children die from malnutrition, I have witnessed firsthand the suffering of children who are starving. And its impact on children lasts for their whole life. If we think about Ottawa, if we think of all the children between 0 and 4 here in Ottawa, the number of children who have severe malnutrition requiring urgent treatment in Gaza is much beyond that, of all the children from 0 to 5 requiring urgent treatment in Gaza. Every single one of us has loved a child at some point in our lives. I challenge you and everyone else here in Canada to see the children of Gaza in their children and those of your family and your friends. These children deserve the care, dignity, and support that we have an obligation to provide. We cry that what we're seeing in Gaza does not fit with our Canadian values. And we cry because, as healthcare professionals, because we are unable to stop this, despite the fact that we're from such a powerful country. Right now, as Canadians, we have a small window to act. And if we don't, it will be a blot on our history. We need to bring medications and food urgently into Gaza. We need to create a real arms embargo, and we need to enforce the Genocide Convention.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Rizwan Minhas. I worked at the European Gaza Hospital last year. Last year, when we were entering Gaza through the Rafah border, my fellow Canadian, Jacob Flickinger, who was working for World Central Aid Kitchen, a few minutes ahead of us, was deliberately targeted with Israeli airstrikes. Along with him, 4 other World Central Aid Kitchen people were killed a few miles away from us. I stand here today, not for myself, but for the voices underneath the rubble, for the children bombed in their beds, for the doctors killed in their scrubs. There is no independent journalism allowed in Gaza at this point, but there are international doctors. We've been there. We are the eyewitnesses to this genocide. We are telling the truth. And yes, IDF forces are lying to you. Innocent people are being killed in mass numbers, from paramedics to doctors, and even children. Gaza currently has the highest amount of child amputees per capita in the world. This never happens. It does not happen unless you deliberately target innocent civilians. To those people like Douglas Murray who mockingly ask, have you even been there? To them, I say, yes, Douglas, we have been there. Not once, multiple times. Not for a photo op or headlines, but to save lives. But as doctors, we can't end this genocide. When working in the hospital last year, in the European Gaza Hospital, I saw so many kids with burn wounds. Very painful. This one child, by name of Selma, I remember, 5 years old, third degree burn wounds, all the way to her bone. I thought I could cheer her up with the candy. And she's like any other child. Half the fun is to open that wrapper. But because of her contractures from a third degree burn wound, she could not even open the wrapper. Instead of putting a smile on her face, she became frustrated. At that time, I realized not only did Israel burn her hands, but they burned her smile. This is not a war. This is a genocide, confirmed by Amnesty International, Doctors Without Borders, the Jewish Voice for Peace, and International Court of Justice. To my fellow Canadian physicians, don't be silent. 1,500 healthcare workers have been killed. Remember the name, Dr. Adnan Al-Borsh, was not only killed, was raped and tortured before he was killed.
Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya did not leave the hospital till the end. He's still in as a hostage with the Israeli army. And recently, Dr. Najjar, a pediatrician working in the hospital, 9 out of her 10 children were burned alive. Each brought one by one in front of her, she could not even recognize them. To our politicians, please have the courage to say the words, Israel is committing a genocide. These children who have died at least deserve this justice. Impose a two-way arms embargo. And let me end with this. There is no moral difference between killing children in chambers or by burning them alive in their sleep. Both are genocide. I understand that. Both are evil and both demand justice. Thank you.
My name is Yipeng Ji. I'm a family doctor, and I've studied how colonialism affects the health of indigenous peoples in the settler colonial state of Canada and also Palestinians in occupied Palestine. I was in Gaza last year as a medical volunteer in primary care clinics in central Rafah, and I witnessed with my own eyes the impacts of forced starvation on the children I care for. This is an entirely preventable famine imposed on the Palestinian people in Gaza by Israel and also its allies, who are withholding life-saving food, water, and medical aid to an entire population under illegal occupation and blockade since 2007, which has also included the Israeli policy of limiting food to only meet the minimum amount of calories to avoid malnutrition, effectively putting the entire population of Gaza on a diet. This colonial practice of starvation is not new. Sir John A. Macdonald, Canada's first prime minister, used this tactic to ethnically cleanse and displace the indigenous population and hit, in his own words, that they were kept on, quote, the verge of actual starvation, unquote. Earlier this morning, I was at the protest against CANSEC, which is Canada's, quote, premier global defense and security trade show, unquote, run by CADSI, the American Association of Defense and Security Industries, a defense industry lobby group whose board of directors include executives from companies that supply the Israeli military. One such company that is attending this conference, this trade show, is GasStops. With their sole manufacturing facility located in Ottawa, they are the only manufacturer of specific engine sensors that go into the F-35 fighter jets. These are the same fighter jets that are dropping 2,000-pound bombs on Palestinians in Gaza as we speak. Companies in our own backyards are funding, supplying, and fueling this genocide. This is our problem to solve. This is our complicity that we must end. This is our responsibility to the collective liberation for Palestinians who deserve life, dignity, and freedom from occupation, apartheid, and genocide. Free Palestine.
My name is Dorothea Guchardo. I run a Canadian medical organization that sends in medical aid and personnel under the World Health Organization. We're here today to sound the alarm about the collapse of the humanitarian system and Canada's role in failing to uphold the international laws that it claims to defend. Just yesterday, we witnessed the brutal reality of the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which revealed itself not as a humanitarian effort, but as a militarized spectacle. Starving Palestinians were drawn into an active conflict zone with the promise of food, only to be met with armed personnel, gunfire, and chaos. This is not humanitarianism. This is using hunger, fear, and humiliation to dehumanize a population. And the suffering is not accidental. As Dr. Majid, a Palestinian ER physician in Gaza, told me, and I quote, "In Gaza, starvation is not a byproduct of war. It is being used as a weapon. I have treated children reduced to skin and bones, dying not because of rare disease, but because they lacked food, clean water, and basic formula." Canada is legally obligated under the Geneva Conventions to ensure that aid is delivered impartially and that humanitarian access is protected. I urge our leaders, especially Prime Minister Mark Carney, to act in line with the message of his own book, published in 2021, called Values: Building a Better World for All. In it, he argues that we must place human dignity and shared moral commitments above markets, politics, and power. If our values mean anything, they must mean something now, in Gaza. We therefore call on the government of Canada to reject the militarized aid model, to restore full access to the UN and legitimate humanitarian organizations, to ensure aid is delivered safely, neutrally, and at scale, not through armed contractors, and to withhold Canadian funding from any entity that fails to meet these humanitarian principles. This is not only a test of Canadian policy, it is a test of our values. Thank you.
What you just heard were testimonies from Canadian doctors after returning from volunteering at Gaza hospitals, delivered at a press conference held in Canada on May 28, 2025. By the way, the prescription to end genocide in Gaza, mentioned in the remarks we just heard, and issued by Doctors Against Genocide, is posted on our website, arabvoices.net. There was a question and answer session that followed the press conference. Let's listen to a couple of them.
I'd like to hear from those of you who worked at the European hospital. When the strikes occurred earlier in May, Israel said that it was targeting underground terrorist infrastructure. And for those of you who were on the ground there, can you tell us whether you saw any evidence of any infrastructure or aware of any terrorist infrastructure on the ground?
No. I don't know what else I have to say other than that, but no. I have seen nothing. No physician, surgeon, or other volunteer internationally I have known has seen something. This includes people that have been working in Gaza with NGOs for more than 20 years. I wonder how it is thought that Palestinian people would continue to come to work, how people would bring their family members to a hospital, how international staff would keep coming to volunteer if that were the case. And I wonder why we continue to listen to the claims of the Israeli Defense Forces and we do not seek out independent verification from other sources whenever these complaints come up, as they have again and again and again, without ever having any independent corroboration.
I want to thank the medical professionals for sharing their testimonies. I don't want to ask a question that traumatizes, but I'm wondering if one or two of you could speak about what stays with you. You talked about what you saw on the ground. I'm wondering if you're still in touch with anyone, if there's a thought that comes to your head at night, if you'd be comfortable sharing.
There's a lot of stories that keep coming back to me as I reflect on my time in Gaza, and I'm in constant communication with the team that I was part of. I called my boss when the hospital was bombed in Gaza, and he was there with a team of nurses. The nurses on the video call looked me in the eye and they said, "We're starving." And my boss was there. He was trying to organize the evacuation of the department. As you can imagine, organizing an evacuation where you have very little places to evacuate to is a near impossible project. And he had stayed there to take care of his staff and sent all the other staff home. So that's one of the stories that really stuck with me most recently in May. I also met another patient who I met in the emergency room. He was extremely sick. One of his family members actually came to the emergency room with him, was a nurse at another hospital and was in the resuscitation bay with us while we were trying to save the patient. And I was extremely worried that the patient was going to die. When I went to go visit him on the ward, I came to understand a little bit more about his life, that he had 6 children. And he said to me, he looked at me in the eye, he said, "Why did they target me? I'm a man, I have a job, I've never been involved in politics, I don't own a gun. Why was I chosen? And will my story make a difference if it's heard by the world?" And he asked me to tell his story. So I'm sharing it with you now.
I think, like any one of us who have worked in Gaza, you meet and befriend people and you stay in touch. I think about Mohammed. I think about Abdullah. These were the Palestinian ambulance drivers that drove me and my team around as we worked at the clinics, visited European Gaza Hospital to deliver medications and supplies. And to be in touch with them, they tell me how they can't feed their children. When I was there last year, they were sharing their food with us. And to see Palestinian healthcare workers like themselves express this form of dignity and humanity to visitors, to guests on their land. They wish that they could have done more, actually. And now I don't know what to say back to them. I don't know what to text back, because we're witnessing in real time, live streamed, their annihilation and extermination of an entire peoples, an entire community. So I don't know what more to say to them. I don't know what more to say here.
If I might add one thing to the stories that we hear from, so Doctors Against Genocide, and we have doctors who go to Gaza all the time. One of the stories that stuck with us is a testimony from Dr. Mohammed Khizaiz. He said, "Do you know what a starving child looks like towards the end? They can't cry. Their heart slows down, and then it just stops giving up on the world." So I want to leave you with this image. Imagine children starving, unable to cry, and then completely slowing down and stopping, because this world has let them down. So I just want to leave you with that.
That was part of the question and answer session that followed the press conference held in Canada on May 28, 2025, organized by Doctors Against Genocide. You're listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston since 2002 and syndicated on dozens of radio stations in different U.S. and European cities. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Did you know that this program, Arab Voices, has been on the air since April 2002? That's over 22 years of weekly Arab Voices programming, over 1,000 programs covering different topics with more than 1,000 expert guests appearing on this show from around the globe. All of that has been possible because of your support to KPFT, Houston's community station, our community radio station. And it is time for the fund drive. Please call right now to support KPFT at 713-526-5738 and make a tax-deductible contribution or make it online at kpft.org. Every dollar counts. Think of the value you get out of KPFT and really for everyone who listens. We know that not everyone can contribute, but if you can and appreciate what KPFT brings you every day, please consider a pledge, because KPFT relies on you, the listeners, for support. The phones are open. There is room for your call. Help keep up the momentum. Call 713-526-5738 or donate online at kpft.org. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.